From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We are still following the evolving impact of the partial government shutdown on science, and we've heard from some of you. Thank you. One theme that's come to light is the impact on government contractors. They make up 40% of the federal workforce overall, half of the workforce at NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Contract workers may or may not receive back pay. For the time being, many contractors are dipping into their bank accounts to make payroll. And many of those contractors are small, woman, minority, and veteran-owned businesses. Laura Schulman is president of Integrated Statistics, a company with over 100 employees who work at NOAA. She says she can only stay afloat through the end of the month.
Then I have to have a very serious discussion with my banker, my congressman, and my mother.
In addition to the financial hardships, we've heard about research slowdowns due to lack of access to government data and about long-term ecological studies that are losing an entire season of data because researchers can't get into national parks or can't work with their collaborators in federal agencies. In all likelihood, we won't know the full impact of the government shutdown until it's over. In the meantime, we'll continue to follow this, and we still want to hear from you. Share your shutdown stories with us by emailing livinglabradio@wgbh.org or tweet us at Living Lab Radio. You've heard of Black Friday, but what about Blue Monday? In addition to being Martin Luther King Day, the third Monday in January is known to some as the saddest day of the year. But why? Is there really any basis for that? And if so, what can we do about it? Dr. Catherine Sanderson is the Manuel Family Professor of Life Sciences at Amherst College and author of The Positive Shift, Mastering Mindset to Improve Happiness, Health, and Longevity. That book is due out at the end of the month. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
So as I understand it, the origins of Blue Monday go back to 2005. A British psychologist named Dr. Cliff Arnall actually came up with a mathematical formula to explain it, but it's not necessarily clear that he had a lot of science to support that. Is there a scientific basis for the idea of a saddest day or even a saddest part of the year?
There is not particularly strong data suggesting that there is a Blue Monday phenomenon. So you're exactly right that his scientific techniques and the strong evidence just really isn't really there for a particularly saddest day of the year. That being said, January is a time in which many people do tend to report feeling sadder. So at least that part of his hypothesis is probably right on.
What kind of stats are we talking about when you say people report feeling sadder? Who's tracking things like that and for what reason?
Well, if we look at overall large-scale surveys, research shows that people tend to feel happier during certain times of the year, less happy, you know, during January, for example, but also other particular days. Gallup often does polls sort of tracking overall well-being. More recently, there's also been some really interesting research using social media, so looking at things like the positivity of people's Twitter feeds or Facebook posts, et cetera.
So that original mathematical formula that Dr. Arnall came up with in 2005 included things like the weather, how much debt you might have incurred in particular over the holiday season, the time since failing your New Year's resolution, which we're only partway into January. It's a little depressing in and of itself. And motivation levels. I mean, these all things sound like things that could make you happier or sadder. But again, do we know whether any of those factors do go into determining people's happiness or what factors might be at play when you talk about this kind of general slump of not feeling quite as happy in January?
Yeah, so all of those factors do, in fact, lead to lower overall levels of well-being. In addition, there's often a sort of feeling of a letdown that December is a time in which many people are looking forward to, you know, seeing family, to opening presents, to having a break from work, et cetera. And then all of a sudden January comes around and there's the letdown after the excitement of the holiday period. And that probably plays a role as well.
Right. So suddenly it's cold, it's dark, and you have to go back to work and things just don't seem quite as fun and rosy as they did a few weeks ago.
And of course, couple that with it's hard to exercise outside for many of us, at least in the Northeast. Many people report feeling that exercise increases their overall well-being, and it may be harder to get in those steps and that activity during the cold, dark, potentially snowy days in January. It's also a time, of course, in which people may be feeling particular financial pressure as all of those credit card bills start coming in that accompanied the holiday shopping in December.
Now, going back to just the general seasonality of happiness, there is this idea of seasonal affective disorder that many people experience, in some cases, clinical depression during the winter months. And there was some really interesting research that came out recently actually showing that there are special brain cells in special cells in the eye that sense light, and they're connected to mood sensing or mood creating regions in the brain. How much do we understand about the connection between things like weather and light levels and our happiness or our state of mental health?
That's a fascinating topic. And really, one of the most important findings is that we're learning more and more about those connections between things like light and weather and neural processes and how that's all being processed in the brain. We're learning more and more as we have better techniques, so fMRI data, for example, to be able to look at those associations. What we do know is that although the same neural processes obviously work for everybody, there are also huge individual differences in terms of how much people feel responsive to things like how much light and how much weather. So obviously, not everyone experiences seasonal affective disorder. For some people, it's really debilitating. For other people, you know, changes in how much light they get seem to be no big deal. So the best evidence really suggests that there may also be individual differences at play. I look at this in terms of, you know, people who describe themselves as morning people versus night owls. They're just people who seem to have a biological clock that runs a little bit differently.
And how do some of these seasonal or shorter-term factors in happiness relate to what we know about factors that go into, you know, longer-term overall life happiness?
So one of the very consistent findings is that people have somewhat of an overall tendency to think in more positive or negative ways. So the best evidence now suggests that about 50% of our happiness is in fact coded in our genes. And so that means that some people have a head start experiencing happiness and other people really don't. And what's important about that finding is it means that for some people, it's pretty easy to look on the bright side, to find the silver lining and so on. And those people can probably weather not only changes in climate or, you know, rainfall, et cetera, but also even more substantial life crises and problems. Other people who don't have that genetic predisposition to happiness may find themselves really in a slump and have more difficulty pulling themselves out when they're having a period of sadness or loneliness.
Catherine Sanderson, your work and your upcoming book focus a lot on ways to shift our mindset, despite that kind of genetic component to things. Other than maybe taking a vacation to a warm, sunny spot in the middle of winter, what are some strategies for beating winter blues for those who are struggling with it?
So one really important thing to keep in mind is that this too will pass. That in the middle of January, it often feels like this winter is going on forever. And if you're not doing well, if you're feeling sad or lonely or depressed, keeping in mind that this is temporary, it's not permanent, is really important to give people sort of hope that they're not always going to feel like they do now. It's also really important to force yourself to do particular behaviors that we know will increase happiness. And those are things like getting enough exercise, making sure that you are getting enough sleep. We've all heard about the massive focus on, you know, sleep deprivation in our society. It can also be things like doing things for other people, volunteering in your community, donating to charity, spending time with good family and friends.
And then in the longer term sense, are there strategies that can overcome that genetic happiness set point, or are we pretty much stuck with that for the rest of our lives?
So there's good news and bad news. So the bad news is we probably are sort of stuck with it, and there is sort of a set point. The good news is there are ways that we can train ourselves with practice to find greater happiness, even if we don't have that, you know, genetic win of the lottery. I look at it very much like metabolism, that we know that there are people who can eat whatever they want and they never gain weight. I'm not one of those people, but there are people like that. And there are, similarly, there are people who can kind of go through life, and even when negative things happen, they can feel happy. But what we know is that just like people who don't have a naturally great metabolism can learn to maintain a healthy weight through exercise and diet, people who do not have the genetic predisposition to happiness can also learn to find happiness by changing their thoughts and by making sure they're engaging in behaviors that we know lead to happiness.
That sounds simple, but changing your thoughts is not at all easy.
It's not. It takes practice, but it's very doable. And I think one of the really key examples is that we can become aware of when our thoughts are really not rational or not helpful, and we can learn to reframe them. So here's a really simple example. My son, Robert, when he was, 8 or 9 years old, was heading into school to take the standardized test, the MCAS test. And I've, of course, heard about all the stress and pressure it puts kids under. So I said, I know today is going to be a really hard day, and take some deep breaths and, try to stay calm. I know it's going to be hard. And he looked up at me and said, "I love standardized testing day. It's so quiet. Everybody just sits and fills in the little bubbles. And at the end of the day, you get candy." And that's really a perfect example of reframing something that we think of in society as being a really stressful rite of passage that elementary kids go through. And instead thinking about it as, here's a quiet, relaxing day in which you're filling in bubbles. And that's an example of reframing a particular situation in a more positive way.
Are there resources for people who might be interested in getting started with that sort of practice? I mean, it's almost like exercise, right? Something that you're saying, practice over and over and over. Are there resources for people interested in getting started on that?
Absolutely. And I love the example that you gave, that it is like exercise, that if you have a plan to, run a 5K or whatever, you have to start by, running a mile. You have to start by buying the running shoes. You have to start by training. So I talk about all of these things in my book. And I also have some videos that people can watch on my website, which is sandersonspeaking.com. And all of the research really illustrates that with practice, we can develop a more positive mindset that we know leads to better happiness and, in fact, also better health.
And, in fact, even longer life, right?
And, in fact, even longer life. That research has shown that people who adopt a positive mindset have greater life expectancy. And in some cases, that's even been shown to be as much as, 7 or 8 years.
So definitely worth the investment.
Definitely worth the investment. And it's also important to know that happiness and health are very linked. So doing things that make you happy will also make you healthier and in turn experience a longer life.
Dr. Catherine Sanderson is the Manuel Family Professor of Life Sciences at Amherst College and author of The Positive Shift, Mastering Mindset to Improve Happiness, Health, and Longevity. That book is due out at the end of the month. Catherine, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for the invitation.